And up next on Free Radio's stream at freakradio.org, it's Bathrobe Spears broadsides the December 6th. Are we at December 6th? We are. December 6th, 2018. And lots of interviews, lots of, well, looking forward to the December 11th shitty council meeting when the new council members come in. And lots of bits and pieces from the streets. So, and particularly a long interview with tenant activist Cynthia Berger, who's working with dealing with a possible, deadline day, demolition day, eviction day on December 12th after the city council fails to extend the rent freeze, which is going to be a real issue. Should be quite a hot meeting on December 11th. You're going to hear more about that if you stay tuned, and I hope you do.
I'm tired of moon songs, of star and of June songs. They simply make me nap. And ditties romantic drive me nearly frantic. I think they're all full of pap. History's making, nations are quaking. Why sing of stars above? For while we are waiting, Father Time's creating new things to be singing of. Sing me a song with social significance. All other tunes are taboo. I want a ditty with heat in it, appealing with feeling and meat in it. Sing me a song with social significance, or you can sing till you're blue. Let meaning shine from every line, or I won't love you.
So let's kick this off with some very brief interviews. Here is Elijah right outside the Sub Rosa Cafe on right after the Wednesday Huff meeting. We're having meetings, last few weeks we've been having meetings every week there as the winter gets closer. For those who are outside, people get more concerned about what to do. Not that we do anything at these meetings other than talk about what to do, but who knows? One of these years, talk may lead to action. And here's a fellow I ran into outside, Elijah. I knew him from, not sure whether it was the Freedom Sleepers or some other protest, but here he is. Well, it is December 5th, and about 1:15, I'm talking with
Elijah Dixon.
And Elijah, you say that you got the old strange kind of meter maid approached you.
Well, he left a ticket. It was one of the DO's detention officers from inside the jail. I remember him. And when I saw him around, he was giving out tickets around here then. And I said, I hope you're proud of yourself. He said, be good, Dixon. And that's all he said.
And what kind of a ticket did he give you?
It was a parking ticket. It was before 7 o'clock.
What was it for?
It was for, I guess, illegal parking, I guess, you know.
And how were you illegally parked? Or were you illegally?
I don't know. I was asleep. And, you know, he used to get a brief time to maybe about 10 o'clock. But that morning, he was on one, and he did it.
So was there a sign that said you're not allowed to be parked in that area? Or?
They do have signs there, but it's most related to parking during the daytime, 2 hours and stuff like that, you know.
It said, probably said no parking between midnight and 6?
At the library. People still park there. I parked there this morning.
So in other words, this is where there's metered parking, right?
Yeah.
And so the meters don't come on until I think it's eight or nine.
Yeah.
But you were, this happened at 7:30.
About seven, yeah.
Well, that sounds like shit. And you say you've gotten two tickets?
I got another ticket on May Street. I was parking in an area where they said you need a permit.
And before we get into the May Street ticket, the meters, of course, along the downtown area begin, I believe, at 8 or 9. And so if you got a ticket at 7:30, it was a harassment ticket. I don't know about parking in the parking lot next to the library, which is a public parking lot, but usually requires you to pay something But I only think that's between certain hours. But at the other hours, it may be closed. And I've got to confess my own ignorance on this. I should look into it next time I get downtown. Perhaps I will. Let's hear a little more.
Mid the park, I saw the sign that said between this and this and that, you know. But the may it said, small print, it said, you must have a permit. So I was parked there about 15 minutes. I went to the courthouse and Jack in the Box, and I came back. I had a ticket.
And the ticket cost was?
The combined was $96.
And you live in your vehicle?
I live in my vehicle. Boy, I'm talking about that's. I live from month to month. You know, $96. Boy, I could have towed that around with me for a whole month. That's $96.
Great.
I can't have.
And we have been talking with
Elijah Dixon.
Anything you want to add, Elijah?
I'm a country boy from Alabama.
Hey,
okay.
Thank you, sir.
All right.
So a lot of folks, or at least a number of folks, do survive in their vehicles as housing, in essence, in Santa Cruz. And some of us, through militant action, mostly by people who actually are in their vehicles, Julie Shull is a good example of this. Actually, I'm getting Julie's last name wrong. I'm confusing it with something else, I think. But Julie, who runs RV Full-Timers, you can go to her website, particularly concerned about homeless issues, and particularly homeless issues for folks in RVs. I think it's a Facebook page. And she's been sending me emails, which I often forward the stories that she, the newspaper articles and the other interesting bits of information that she comes up with. One of the issues has been the Coastal Commission's support, ironically, I think almost accidentally, for homeless people in their RVs or in their vehicles. Santa Cruz, as you know, made it illegal to sleep in your vehicle after 11 o'clock at night, but that essentially got sidelined by the Boise v. Martin decision. And so they can't really do that at all unless they have really adequate shelter. They don't. They unfortunately dump the entire car park program, which would have been a good idea for people to have a place to go. So they have to let people park and sleep. But they instead put up permit parking. That's been Cynthia Matthews, former council member, Cynthia Matthews' brainchild, which she cooked up essentially to help gentrify neighborhoods, I think, primarily. Well, who knows what her motivation was, but it had that impact. And you've probably seen the signs in some neighborhoods, no parking between midnight and 6 a.m. or 1 a.m. and 6 a.m. without a permit. And, of course, you can't get a permit unless you live there. And usually that means that the spaces are completely empty, because what they really want to do is drive people away, not really provide spaces or assure spaces for those who live there, but to get rid of people who they don't want around there or who they imagine they might not want around there. Now, in the coastal zone, the Coastal Commission has ruled you have to allow access to the coast. And so if you're in the coastal zone and they post these signs, you need to get special permission from a local Coastal Commission agency. And apparently, on a number of occasions, the city has failed to do this. Arrogant or oblivious as it is, and indifferent to the real needs of people. And so Julie Shull sends me an email. The city took down two no parking signs on Natural Bridges Drive today, which is good news. And indeed, someone from the Coastal Commission wrote her back and CC'd me at my request as well, copied me the email. And what they added was this. This is from a woman named Sarah Carville at the Coastal Commission locally. I've identified new overnight parking restrictions within the coastal zone that have not been authorized with a coastal permit on Delaware, Natural Bridges, Mission Extension, and Swift. I've also noticed new signs and restrictions on Fair, but these are outside the coastal zone, as you suspected. I think the city understands our concern isn't limited to Natural Bridges. I will reiterate that in my discussion with them. And this is Sarah. So it looks like, at least in some cases, the Coastal Commission's local people are paying some attention. I've not been terribly optimistic about them, even though the Coastal Commission itself did uphold my appeal against former councilwoman, well, I guess she's still a councilwoman until next Tuesday, Rochelle Naroyan's RVs Get Out of Santa Cruz at Night bill, which passed the city council and was rubber-stamped by the local Coastal Commission. But in fact, the appeal we appealed that permit that they were granted, and the bigger Coastal Commission, when they came to town, found that there were no facilities for RVs in that zone. You couldn't just ban the entire coastal access in the city. And so that one was put on hold and has been on hold for 2 years. So it gives a small measure of relief to people in their vehicles, or particularly people in their RVs as well, who need to sleep at night and want to do so along the coast. That also, the deputy sheriff started doing the same thing. I wrote to them, and I think maybe Julie did the same. And they claim to have stopped this, but it's not entirely clear what's happening. So if you have any instances of the sheriffs claiming, putting up signs or acting on the basis of signs that say no parking at night, that has to be okayed with the Coastal Commission if it's along Highway 1. So leave me a call at 423-4833, and I will show you or tell you or advise you as to how to get in touch with the Coastal Commission if you don't already know how. So meanwhile, what about winter shelter for folks who are outside but don't have a vehicle? Maybe they have a tent. Maybe they have a sleeping bag. Maybe they have a blanket and they can hide in the shelter of a building. Maybe they've snuck their way into one of the many vacant buildings around Santa Cruz. I suggest that a project that Huff is working on is to compile a list of vacant buildings, which I think Christopher Crone made up years ago when he was mayor, or when he was council member back in 1998 through 2002, when he was on the city council at that time, which we were trying to find places where homeless people could go for shelter. And that in those days we were optimistically thinking the city could actually provide the shelter. But, of course, that never happened. And now it's up to people themselves to provide the shelter. The city lies about it, claims they have winter shelter when they don't, and then creates programs that it then disperses the next month or 2 months later, even though there's funding aplenty around, at least so it looks. Anyway, the newest campground to emerge is out at Ross, and apparently that's now getting some official sanction, although I don't have a specific paper clarity on that from, say, Chief Mills or Parks and Rec boss Elliot. But in fact, there are 50 to 80 tents out there, or there were in the last couple times I've been out there. There's two porta-potties, not disabled, accessible, not particularly the best, and one washing station, no sharps containers that I've seen. Maybe there are some inside. And there are a number of trash cans, no dumpster that I've seen. And this is right next to the pedestrian bridge behind Ross's store in the Gateway Shopping Center next to Highway 1. You may have seen it as you drive by on the freeway. In any case, here's one of the occupants, and it's either Brandy or Randy, I'm never sure which. I don't know if my hearing is going, or it's just I've got a cold today, so forgive me. But here's something that she had to say when I ran into her a couple days ago. So it's about 4, and we're talking to
Brandy.
This is right
in NTB.
NTB, near the Ross campground. What do we call this?
Yeah, it's actually called Moe's Office, but not anymore.
Really? Yeah. How did that happen?
Well, a friend of mine camped here, and he slept at the end of the path for few years, and his name is Mo, and so we called it Mo's Office, and then all of a sudden they started trickling in, and
it became a flood.
Yeah, and they closed the encampment over on River Street or on Highway 9, so they told them to come here. I don't know if they're rounding them up for slaughter or what the deal is. My camp is safe. I've been there 2 years. You know, I'm smart
here in this area.
Yeah, I'm smart enough to be in the woods. But, the shelter just got $3.2 million awarded, and where the fuck is it going? Excuse my language. But they should have foundation poured somewhere already. These people need a place to be, not a fucking field that's muddy. And they gave them 2 toilets, and they're lucky they got that, you know?
And washing station.
Yeah, that it runs out of water because there's too many people.
Have you noticed anything? Have you been? You don't live here at the moment.
Oh God, no! I wouldn't live there ever. No.
Do you visit friends here?
I have a few friends, yeah, that are in there.
How are they doing?
They're okay. They're okay. There's a lot of, unfortunately, there's a whole lot of drugs going on over there, and I'm not judgmental. I smoke weed, so I'm 54 years old. I'm an old hippie.
And, of course, she's referring to the Ross campground, which she says over there.
So, but, yeah, no, it's there's been fights and whatnot. The police come and check on them. The Rangers come and check on them.
Occasional charity food giveaways.
Yeah. They have. Yeah, in fact, day before yesterday, there was two Spanish ladies that came down and brought off pulled pork sandwiches. So
pulled
yeah,
pork. I like pulled pork.
but yeah, the money that was awarded, they should be doing something. The shelter that's over there is useless to us. You
the
don't
almost lack of services center.
They don't. Yeah, they don't feed anymore. They don't. Excuse me, I have a medical condition. I have ulcerative colitis. I needed to use the restroom. They wouldn't let me in.
When was this?
About 2 weeks ago.
What time of day or night?
It was about 6:45 p.m.
And who denied you access?
One of the guys that works there.
Guard at the gate or?
Yeah, no, just one of the guys that works on the lot. I can't remember.
You got into the, but you didn't get to the bathroom. You got halfway there?
No, yeah, he wouldn't let me in at all.
So you couldn't get past the gate.
Yeah, no, I call it the inside-out jail. It's ridiculous. They house who they like. It's about nepotism and people that get checks and whatnot. And some of the people that are in there, I'm coming with. I got to go. Some people that are in there don't belong there because they're in there doing drugs and hiding it. And, you know, they need to build a big frigging shelter.
Randy, how long have you been around?
I've been here in Santa Cruz for 33 years. And I've been homeless this time. This is the second time, 2.5 years. And they do nothing to help you.
Hey, get in touch with us again. We'll talk some more.
Okay.
You've got a phone number. We'll call you.
All right.
I'll give you my... All right. I'll remove it.
Thank you.
Randy.
Have a good day.
Hey, you too. Pushing the camp bridge. Pushing the campground past the pedestrian bridge. And it's dried out somewhat. Counting the tents. About 60 or 65 visible from standing near the garbage cans. And there are bunches of garbage cans. I'm counting 10, 11. And still kind of wet, but not as muddy as it was. Let's see if Mac is around here anywhere. Lucas moved his tent. If you want to say.
Steve-o.
And Steve, how long have you been here, Steve?
Years.
And how long have you been on this particular campground?
Oh, probably...
Weeks? Months?
Weeks.
What do you make of it?
Okay. It's nice.
Any, is it... Last year at this time, did you ever get to the San Lorenzo camp?
I didn't see it. Mm-hmm. I thought it looks... It's okay.
Yeah?
I think,
The man is tongue-tied, but we have been talking with...
Steve-O.
Thank you, sir. And musical break time. Here's an oldie from Phil Oakes, 10 Cents a Coup, it's called.
It was a used car dealer's election, and the choice was rather small. Boys agreed it's the war we need, so there's no president at all. Here's to Nixon and Agnew, they are the stars of the stage and screen. It's not since Laurel and Hardy have I laughed so hard I've screamed. I thought that Johnson was the devil, I thought we couldn't do no worse. Now the White House stands in Disneyland. This country must be under a curse. Here's to Nixon and Agnew. They are the stars of the stage and screen. It's not since Laurel and Hardy have I laughed so hard I scream. I dreamed Nixon died of a suntan. There was only Spiro left. And his swearing in. He fell on his chin, he assassinated himself. Here's to Nixon and Agnew, they are the stars of the stage and screen. It's not since Laurel and Hardy have I laughed so hard I scream.
Well, Well, it's not one of Oak's greatest hits, although it's from an album called Phil Oak's Greatest Hits. A couple of announcements, since things are going to be happening towards the end of the show around town. At least there's one meeting happening at 7:30 out at 150 Felker Street, which is where Brent Adams' day-night storage program is located, in Suite H. It's you have to kind of go inside the corridor alleyway, and you'll probably see some signs directing you to he's describing as a coalition. Let's see, it's a Santa Cruz Coalition on Homelessness, a Path Forward, hosted by the Warming Center Program, 7:30 tonight, Thursday, December 6th. I'm reading from his recent email. At the Coalition on Homelessness meeting room, 150 Felker Street, Suite H. I think that's the storage meeting room. He writes, as federal and state homelessness funding moves through like huge weather systems, seemingly leaving local residents with little to say on the matter, it's important to realize we have the ability to determine our own path forward. Santa Cruz Coalition on Homelessness is a place where citizens can band together and address basic needs while being aware of these funding sources. This moment is critical, so let's come together and build a collective vision and collective power towards helping people who sleep outside. And he further writes some questions. What is our long-term vision as a community? Easily accessible hygiene, laundry, and storage for all. Safe, clean, and dignifying shelter for all by any means. A true declaration of the homeless crisis. HUD, CSEH, HEAP, and HAP funding paradigms. Those are acronyms for organizations. I can't tell you exactly which ones they are. He's been pretty keeping up on that. And if you want to get up on that, go down there tonight. 150 Felker Street, that's the end of the street which Denny's is on, sort of the last street right past Denny's as you head toward the river, and you'll find his office and this meeting at 7:30. I believe all are welcome. I would have had a direct report from him, but unfortunately he got angry with me and hung up as we talked. That hasn't happened for a while, but this time it did. It's too bad. I'm hoping that we will mend some bridges, and again, we'll have some more information from Brent, who's a very good source of information, I think. We don't agree on things at different times, but he usually doesn't. We may growl and yell at each other at times, but hopefully we can continue to exchange info, and we'll see if that continues, and hope it does. Now, we used to have callers on this show, and there's talk at the Free Radio Collective of actually getting the phone active again and having it put in somebody's home, since we don't seem to be able to find a studio. But you regular listeners should know there's still a $300 reward out for anyone who can find us a location for a year or any part of a year. You'll get some of that $300, prorated. We need a 10x10 space. We need access to electricity, internet, bathroom, stuff like that. And you can find more by going to freakradio.org, more about the station as well. We don't think we're back on the air yet. We're still negotiating for a second thing, which is a transmitter site. Transmitter site is where we will put up our antenna. And if you have any ideas on that or on the studio space prospect, give a call to me at 423-4833 and I'll put you in touch with the collective. That's 423-4833. Or you can go online to freakradio.org and leave us a message there. In any case, I did get a call while I was doing some recording of the show, and in this tradition of Free Radio's access to the airways to all who call in, here's that caller doing what he describes as a rant. We have a caller who has been an activist for quite a number of years. Hi, caller.
Hi, Robert.
And what ranting do you have for us today?
Well, Robert, I was recently... there's a news problem in Santa Cruz. I mean, I've been in a lot of protests that were covered by the Sentinel, so I know that they don't cover it very well. So the only place I can find out is either at Indie Bay or Free Radio, and Free Radio is the only uncensored source of news in this town. And I don't get it where I'm at, unfortunately, so I call you. And the other day I called you to find out what was going on at City Hall, and you didn't even know that there was an item on the agenda. I did find out about it at Indie Bay. because they're not putting them on anymore. For some reason, they buried this in an emergency meeting, and it concerned the rent control initiative. And you were quite upset because Sandy had promised you to get some more, to get it on the agenda, but apparently they have changed the rules or something. I haven't heard anything about this, or is this how it's always been? But apparently someone else had never heard this. Did you need, what, 4 city council member and a staff report to put anything on the agenda?
Well, what it boiled down to was, it's a little different, but, you know, you kind of got some of the gist of it. I had heard we knew there was a special session coming up last Tuesday, and the only items on the agenda were the ADU issue, and then, I guess, an issue of rental assistance if you're evicted, or actually being given notice when you're being evicted for as a 90-day rather than a 30-day notice. And neither of those items, it turned out, got voted on. They were both postponed until the December 11th agenda, largely because, as you may learn by reading that paper of record, the Santa Cruz Urinal, or Sentinel as it's called, that the city attorney insisted in a closed session that they hastily held. Apparently there was a lawsuit being threatened by a state landlord association that if they tried to extend the time for renters to be requiring landlords to notify tenants when they're relocating them because they're moving in, that was already preempted by state law, and you can't extend it for more than 30 days, and the landlords would sue. That's kind of my understanding, though I may have it slightly wrong, but you and everybody else will be able to clarify what it is either at the end of today, because it'll be on the agenda for next Tuesday, which will be the last city council meeting of the year, December 11th, unless they hold an emergency meeting, which they probably should if they want to deal with a rent freeze, but you never can tell what these folks do. And actually, what I asked of Sandy Brown was that, Councilmember Brown, was that she request that the rent freeze be put on the special agenda on December 4th. Because that would give more time for the thing to pass, or at least it would put the spotlight on the issue, mobilize activists. I don't have any illusions that the rest of the council would support her, but she would at least, it would come up for public comment. Right. So she...
It's just to have a voice for the people occasionally. You know, we don't always win, but at least we should have a voice when we get people on the city council, I think.
Right.
Well, that's what I don't like about that 4 people. I mean, apparently 2 liberals are on now, so maybe that 4 people is going to work against them. But this kind of same thing happened at Occupy. They wanted to make it very hard to put things on the agenda at Occupy. And then Republicans are doing this crap all the time. It's a very sneaky procedural way. No one even notices it to take away your freedoms. And I just don't like it. And the same thing happening with the library in a garage bullshit. They never asked the public whether they wanted a library in a garage. They just asked them, would you have this amount of square feet or the more square feet version, which is a library in a garage, without telling them that that was the library in a garage. And they also lied about some other funding things. And they've been burying things from the public and trying to pull all these dirty tricks all the time. Yeah, you know, it's very annoying. And we don't have, you're about the only one that covers this stuff, Robert, because, as I said, the Sentinel, it just doesn't cover it well. They don't pay the reporters enough for something. But I've noticed during the protests, and you've been to the protests too, the coverage in the Sentinel is inaccurate.
Well, what happened at that meeting, and I think I may have talked about this on Sunday, was I wanted to get Sandy Brown simply to ask the mayor by email so it would be documented that she wanted an item on the agenda. And it turned out when I talked to the mayor, I happened to run into him last Wednesday when we actually followed your suggestion of doing an actual action right after the Huff meeting. We went over to the mayor's office. And,
oh, good.
And we attempted to get the mayor...
Strike while the iron is hot.
Indeed. And he said that Sandy Brown had never approached him about the issue, had never emailed him, had never spoken to him at all. And he also made the claim that he hedged a lot. But I said, but yes, David, his name is David Terrazas, for those who don't know,
uh-huh.
you have the power to put that on the agenda if you wish. No, I need to have some, we need council members, but you could put it on if you want, right? And finally he acknowledged he could put it on if he wanted. And he said he wouldn't do it unless he got three council members and a staff report.
Oh, so this is not a procedural because that's what, didn't she say that in the city council chamber?
Well, that's the next
all
thing.
All of us, that's the impression I got. Well, that was the procedural rule they had to follow.
That's the next thing that happened.
That's just an excuse.
The next thing,
that's just an excuse for not doing it.
Well, the next thing that happened was at the December 4th meeting on Tuesday, 2 days ago, she, you know, I stood up and I essentially said, David and Councilmembers Terrazas and Councilmember Brown seem to be, someone is either has forgotten or is not telling us the truth about
right.
these issues. And that's a concern of mine. So Sandy Brown then replied from her chair afterward. She said, well, I talked to Robert about this on the 27th, which was when there was the big heated meeting about
right.
it. But she didn't. She never talked to me. So she's either not remembering properly or she's not stating the truth intentionally. I don't know which. At least I certainly don't remember her talking to me. Maybe I've got a memory problem. You know, who knows? I mean, we're all older than...
I can verify that. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah. And so you were outside the chambers when some of this happened at this meeting Tuesday. She said that she was she had talked to the city manager about it, and she had informed the public about it. Actually at the beginning of the November 27th meeting, she asked the city attorney whether she could put on the agenda an emergency item, and he said no. Now, to me, that is not attempting to put an emergency item on the agenda. And in fact, she seemed to be doing that in a kind of an apologetic manner and using the city attorney as cover. I mean, that was my impression.
Well, that could be. But did he actually say that? I mean, she can't just put, that's what I'm wondering. Can she just put it on if she wants to? Apparently not. It has to be the mayor, right?
Well, in terms of the agenda, yes. But in terms of bringing it up at the council meeting, she can bring it up and try to get a vote on it. Now, Micah Posner, a former council member, suggested that no, she did try to put it on, and it was voted down. I don't think that's what happened, but frankly, I've gotten overwhelmed by other events, and I haven't really followed up on that. So that really is, I mean, to me, I like to see people using whatever procedural and extra procedural devices they can get to deal with the obvious, which is that the council is generally, progressives included, generally pretty unresponsive to the needs of poor people, and particularly of people who are outside without shelter. And that
I know that's your issue, and that's true, but it's also the entire middle class of Santa Cruz there. You know, with this library and Rock, they're taking away the farmer's market. They're going to put it into a shoehorn into a very small area of the bus station that it's going to fail there. It's going to only be half the booths. And of course, they're not telling the public that. Nobody even realizes that. Oh, it's going to all be fine is all you ever hear. That's what I mean. This whole government is just lying to the regular people. And it's not just the homeless that are getting screwed. It's everyone who's listening to your show, unless they're one of the 1%. It's the 1% that's getting everything. We essentially have Republicans masquerading as progressives on our city council. They don't really have a party, but if they did have a party, if they would have to put the party that they're acting as, it would all be thrown out, because Santa Cruz is a very democratic, liberal area, and these people are really Republicans masquerading as liberals.
Hmm. Well, you know, at the Huff meeting yesterday, we had a Huff meeting where Elise Cadman brought up the issue of, she was very concerned about another item that will be on the December 11th agenda, but which isn't being talked about a lot, which is the massive redevelopment of the downtown with four-story buildings along between Pacific and Front. And she felt this was a real slap in the face to the community. It was an attack on both renters and unhoused people, because it would mean that nobody could afford anything in a few years in town. And she wanted to raise the issue and get a lot of people, even to the extent of, if necessary, forcing that issue to be postponed until, you know, our heroes and the four horsemen of the apocalypse could come riding in January, you know, the new council members, and, you know, hopefully do something different. And so she may be sending me a flyer wording for a flyer she wants me to distribute. There's also a meeting tonight of the Santa Cruz Coalition on Homelessness run by Brent Adams at his Day and Night Storage over at 150 Felker Street, Suite H, for those who want to go to it.
Yeah, he's doing great work there. I went to his party But it's like, you know, that place is like no drugs on the area. Everything's got to be clean. No news.
Well, let me finish this first, though, that it's 7:30 to 9 o'clock tonight, Thursday night. If anybody wants to go, that's available. He got angry with me and hung up. He got angry with me and hung up on a phone call, so I couldn't get a lot more information. But, you know, I'd say it's worth going to if anyone is interested.
Yeah, it's great. The neighbors all love him, though. They came into that party I went to.
I heard about that.
Yeah, it was great. I'm really impressed. He's saving lives. He's actually reversing what Monica did by tearing up all the storage units, even the ones outside that had nothing to do with the medical bays.
And you're talking about Monica Martinez, formerly of the Homeless Lack of Services Center, who is now the head of what's it called, Enchanted Ensemble, the group that oversees the Homeless Lack of Services Center, a bunch of
What was it? The umbrella group, whatever. She screwed up there. She just, you know, did a whole makeover there and, you know, gave away all their furniture, and they don't really have offices.
I don't know what she's doing there, but I never was too happy with her
Encompass,
on the Homeless Lack of Services Center. So, well,
completely incompetent. But anyways, that costs lives. You know, when people lose their, you know, place to store their sleeping bag, the police and Parks and Rec grab those sleeping bags and they come back to get it, and all of a sudden they're freezing in the cold in December. We have, what, 50, 60 deaths every year from people of the homeless community, and I think the majority of those are from the cold, aren't they? Although I'm told that anytime there's drugs involved, they're attributed to drugs, even if hypothermia.
It's hard to find them actually making a finding of hypothermia, but they do, I think, occasionally on some cases. I mean, it's politically controversial, I would think, to do that. The person to talk to in that is Becky Johnson, who was reviewing that for the last few years when she lived in Santa Cruz, but she's no longer around, as you know. But she may have an item on that. There's also, I understand that Chief...
Well, long story short, though, Robert, from a personal point of view, there's no drugs on the property, so I couldn't really party there, so I had to leave early.
I see. But you can always go outside and, you know, puff out in the bushes.
No, not there. See, that's the whole point of it. He's trying to keep...
Well, you just, you walk a block, you know, come on.
There you go. Well, even at the Sub Rosa, you have to go outside, you know. They serve property even there, although they call it state.
Yeah, I hear you. In any case, there is going to be a meeting next week at the Sub Rosa. I had a discussion with Cynthia Berger of the Santa Cruz Tenants Association. She wants to see a coalition between those who are outside, the unhoused, and renters around issues fighting for essentially eviction protection, rent control, I don't know, rent freezes, rent strikes. I'm not sure exactly where it's going. There's going to be a meeting where the Huff meeting, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom, normally is next week on Wednesday, the day after the city council meeting. That will be what she calls eviction day, because that will be the day that the council did nothing to extend the freeze, as she sees it.
What time is this meeting on Wednesday?
11 o'clock, the usual time when Huff has its Wednesday meetings.
Is there another radical group ahead of your group now at the Sub Rosa?
No, it's the Tenants Association infiltrating us and taking over the Huff scene. Hey, we're mixing together. We're a coalition. Let's be...
There's
a group called Conscience and Action, which is sort of, it seems to be somewhat defunct, but maybe not. Maybe it's simply just sort of on vacation. I don't know.
One of those flash-in-the-pan groups. Okay.
Well, they came in, they did something about bathrooms at Loudoun Nelson, and they did do a protest on the 15th around the issue of the winter shelter hoax, that there was no real winter shelter for people other than this makeshift deal.
Then they got the bathrooms opened at San Lorenzo.
Very briefly.
And then then San Lorenzo got closed.
And San Lorenzo closed again. And apparently...
Now they can't run a bathroom, now they can't run a park either.
Well, is there anything else?
I did notice there was a thriving community behind Ross, though.
Yeah, now that was apparently Andy Mills was out there yesterday or the day before talking to the group. And if you hear anything about that caller, let me know, because I'd like to.
I just walked by it, and there were porta potties there.
Yeah, there are two of them. The last time I was there, yeah.
Whose jurisdiction is that? Is that state land there? That's the question.
I don't know. I'm not aware that it is, if it is.
Because it's along the freeway, right? I mean, the freeway is State Highway Patrol.
It's right. It's next to the freeway, but it also...
She was on the freeway.
I don't know what the story is with that, but I know that it's expanded to 60 to 80 tenths when I was down there a couple days ago. And they do have a hand-washing station, and there seem to be a lot of garbage cans around. And
they need some kind of...
You can hear more about it by listening to the show, probably.
Yeah, that's true. Okay, guess is that it. I think I don't have anything else to rant about.
Yeah, well, remember this: these issues with the library may be changed with the council majority because you
that's
have.
That's what I'm thinking. I don't really have to do much on that. If there's two liberals coming, that's what. Who's coming in now? I'm getting different.
You have three.
Well, I know another issue. I heard recently some gossip here that part of the reason that the homeless, you know, they've got that camp behind Ross and they had San Lorenzo last year is because a change. We have a police chief with less oink in him or something, and they stopped harassing quite as much and allowed these kind of camp things to happen. And I heard that the reason, or I guess our former was retiring anyways, but part of the reason him and Steve Clark were kind of escorted out because of the Bearcat. And now this is just a rumor, but is there anything to that?
Yeah, I don't know. I know that the thing that I noticed before former Chief Vogel retired, so to speak, was that he... It was revealed that he had allowed an ICE agent, that is, say, you know, a Department of Homeland Security agent, not sure which, to maintain a desk in the Santa Cruz Police Department for 9 years previously, and he'd also been cooperating with ICE. That's Immigration Control and Enforcement. In going after
people that are kidnapping children on the borders, our police should be arresting them for kidnapping.
In going after people
here in
Santa Cruz as well, which, you know, I guess provoked a lot of outrage at the city council meeting in February of last year. Anyway,
so that was it then. It was that. Steve Clark got kicked out for that thing?
No, I think Steve left earlier, but I'm not sure. I don't know where he got kicked out. Maybe he did. I don't know. I'm going to have to roll because I got to get this show up, but anything you want to conclude with?
No, that was it. That's what I'm saying is keep up the good work, Robert, because I can never find these things out otherwise.
Well, if you get to that...
Report it well, and there's, you know...
If you get to 150 Felker tonight between 7:30 and 9, let me know how things go.
I can't really go. I can't smoke there. I'm sorry.
Well, you know...
All right, see you later.
All right, man.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
And for those who are new, some of those references may be a little arcane. The Bearcat, of course, is a sort of a dressed-down kind of tank that the police department got without really going through a city council process and that upset a lot of people in the community, but not enough to get it sent back. That's too bad. Steve Clark was the deputy chief of police for a number of years. I knew him back in 1988 when he was just an officer on the beat who was bullying people back then. And he didn't really change as he rose in the ranks. Perhaps that's why he did rise in the ranks. Who knows? Well, let's get a bit of music, and we'll continue with snippets, dippets, and drippets.
Like a winner when it's served up piping hot. nets with their feet in nets. A stone's throw away from a rock fight, but not tonight. Feed them dead. And then comes another ration. Feed them dead. Cause they're the finest in the nation. Feed them dead. But there's something that the beat up with. It's freedom. But it's dead.
And that's Let Them Eat War by Bad Religion. And a tip of the hat to Merlin for passing that song on to me. It's a little hard to hear some of the lyrics, but those I catch sound like something I agree with. So what can I say? And last night, Julia Vinograd, the Berkeley poet known as the Bubble Lady, died at age 75. Here's a story about her from Berkeley's side. Julia was a poet whose works I assiduously collected, and I interviewed her numerous times on free radio. Whenever I go up to Berkeley, at least once a year, she'd come up with a book every year since the 70s, the early 70s, maybe the late 60s. Here's what Berkeleyside, the online website, has to say about her. She was Berkeley's poet laureate, and she was the Bubble Lady. Born in 1943, Vinograd got her B.A. at Cal and then earned an M.A. at the University of Iowa at the Iowa Writers Workshop. Her studies focused on poetry. Literary and creative influences she cited include William Butler Yeats, Eleanor Wiley, Federico Garcia Lorca in English, Leonard Cohen as a poet, and Yehuda Amachi. While at Cal, she was taught and inspired by Tom Gunn, Gary Snyder, and Josephine Miles. At Iowa, Virginia says Paul Carroll blew the lid off of all my safety boxes. Most of these people I don't know, but perhaps some of you out there do. Vinograd returned to Berkeley in 1967, to find massive cultural and political changes in full swing. Everyone had long hair, bare feet, bright clothes, and looked like they just stepped out of a tapestry. Telegraph Avenue was her stomping ground, her nation. She lived at the Berkeley Inn and spent her days at the Café Med, drinking coffee and watching the world pass by. She described the first years of writing in Berkeley. I decided Telegraph was Desolation Row, and I liked it that way. I was in total culture shock. I scuttled around with my mouth and my notebook both open, staring at what I saw and trying to write everything down at once. I forgot about writing styles and just wrote. I didn't want any of it to get away. The poetry continued honoring the lost, the misfits, the downtrodden, the abandoned, the wild, and the free. She was called a street poet. I'm not sure what that means, unless it means that she wrote about the street in the figurative sense of the lower socioeconomic strata. I know this. She was for decades part of Berkeley's cultural DNA. She wrote 50 volumes of poetry, actually more. I think it was between 50 and 60, much of which is about Berkeley. She probably only could have existed in Berkeley. And then there was Julia Vinograd, the Bubble Lady. During the People's Park uprising in May 1969, Vinograd was troubled by a sense of impending violence. She lived right on Telegraph Avenue, the artery that bled so profusely on May 15, 1969. In a moment that evoked Allen Ginsberg, Vinograd bought some bubble soap and went to Telegraph Avenue to blow bubbles. It set a tone. It helped diffuse. And she did it for the rest of her life. She was known to generations of Cal students simply as the Bubble Lady. Julia Vinograd lived with her life with Dylan's Desolation Row as the soundtrack. Berkeley and Telegraph Avenue of the last 50 years swirling around her, saints and angels and martyrs and holy men. Julia Vinograd made real for us those who are wanting and lacking and forgotten and invisible. She did this with humor and verve, and as Herb Cain would say, breen, or brio. In her poem, On the Berkeley Inn, where I've lived for 15 years being torn down, she wrote, Were we all crazy? Mostly we were friends, and with friends, it's not a pertinent question. In 2004, Berkeley honored Vinograd with a Lifetime Achievement Award. City Councilman Chris Worthington presented the proclamation to her at the Berkeley Poetry Festival. When Vinograd was diagnosed with cancer, her friends started a GoFundMe campaign to raise funds for her medical care. Poets, writers, and friends also came together on November 11th at the Art House Gallery and Cultural Center to help raise money to help her. When Julia and her sister Debbie were girls, they sat by a Ming lamp in their grandfather's house. The girls thought that the lamp's name was Ming. Julia made up stories about Ming's life. There were 5 green marbles. Julia told Debbie stories about the marbles. Debbie came to Berkeley in 1973 to see her sister Julia and stayed, painting as Julia wrote poetry. Debbie sat with Julia the night she died, somewhere in that room, were Ming and the 5 marbles. This is a story by Tom Dolzell, a labor lawyer who created a website, Quirky Berkeley, to share all the whimsical objects he has captured with his iPhone. He also writes about important figures of Berkeley's past, such as his 2017 Quirky Berkeley post and Berkeley Side post about Julia Vinaigrette. In 2019, Heyday Press will publish his The Battle for People's Park, Berkeley, 1969, which includes a poem and reminiscences about Julia. And I may be reading more of her poetry. Here is one of her poems called Crackdown from a disc, Bones of the Homeless.
Crackdown on street teenagers. The young street kids aren't violent or crazy or screaming. They just sit around cuddling puppies and each other. They'd have to stand up to bother anyone, and it's too much trouble. They share crumbling day-old donuts and black nail polish, and I write about them. The city just sent a big police presence to arrest my poems. There's 2 cop cars on the avenue, 3 if you count the one that went up the block, a pair patrolling the sidewalk, and a huge black paddy wagon that I think I saw in an Al Capone movie. All this to arrest my poems, and I can't go downtown and get them back eventually the way people do with a towed-away car. The sidewalk is unconvincingly clear. There should be kids in black t-shirts and spiked leather bracelets occasionally slapping a broken string guitar. There should be a girl with orange dreadlocks and beads beating her small drum with her belly button. There should be a boy drawing happy monsters on the pavement with colored chalk. The city says teenagers block doorways and are bad for business. But poetry is my business, and this crackdown is bad for my business.
You can find lots of her stuff on YouTube. Here's one that she read, according to the logo here, on June 9th of this year. Actually, she read a bunch of them, but this is one of her poems.
Jailhouse Ballad. I can't bail my country out of jail. Its teeth are sharp as eagle's claws, but the laws are stronger than iron bars. My country's out of cigarettes. Oh, bring it cigarettes, though I tried to get it to stop smoking because of cancer. But my country threw back its head and howled, I'm bigger and badder than cancer. That's why I'm in jail. They're all jealous of me. My country doesn't quite remember me. I'm just someone who visits. I'll also bring some flowers from an apple tree where my country sang me songs long ago, before anything went wrong.
And here's one more.
Hold on to love. When even the stars are teeth about to bite and the moon is stained with blame, when armies rattle like readying beasts and children cry at night because they see too much, hold on to love, cling to each other. Lovers forget the world, but in these dark days when the world is scraped, elbows, stubbed toes, handcuffed souls, and all directions lost, when everything hurts, hold on to love. Love is the only light left in the world, and the world you forget needs light. There are too many sharks swimming down the street, and there's a hateful cold much worse than winter. Lovers, make each other warm, the world you forget need you now.
Oh, wow.
Many's the hour I've lain by my window and thought of the people who've carried the burdens, who marched into strange fields in search of an answer and ended their journeys an unwilling hero. So here's a song to those who are gone with never a reason why, and a toast of the wine at the end of the line, and a toll of the bell for the next one to die. Back in the coal fields of old Harlan County, some talked of a union, some talked of good wages, and they lined them up in the dark of the forest and shot them down without asking no questions. So here's a song to those who are gone with never a reason why, and a toast of the wine at the end of the line, and a toll of the bell for the next one to die. And over the ocean to the red Spanish soil came the Lincoln Brigade with their dreams of a victory, but they fell in the fire of Germany's bombings, and they fell 'cause nobody would hear their sad warning. So here's a song to those who are gone with never a reason why, and a toast of the wine at the end of the line, and a toll of the bell for the next one to die. In old Alabama, in old Mississippi, two states of the Union so often found guilty, they came on the buses, they came on the marches, and they lay in the jails, or they fell by the highways. So here's a song to those who are gone with never a reason why, and a toast of the wine at the end of the line, and a toll of the bell for the next one to die. This state, it was Texas, the town, it was Dallas. In the flash of a rifle, a life was soon over, and nobody thought of the past million murders, and the long list of irony had found a new champion. So here's a song to those who are gone with never a reason why, and a toast of the wine at the end of the line, and a toll of the bell for the next one to die.
And that singer Phil Oakes, Toast to Those Who Are Gone. I'm not too happy with his happy talk about JFK or his mourning talk about JFK. Frankly, another one in a line of war criminal presidents, in my view. But he's got a sweet voice, and I'll be playing another song or two of his before the show is over. Let's turn now to something coming up. I'm going to play at least part of, if not the entire, interview with Cynthia Berger of the Santa Cruz Tenants Association. I'm hoping that I'm pretty sure it's audible. The question is, I'm hoping that the references don't fly too thick and fast. But hopefully we'll be able to get something out of it, and here goes. So it's December 6th, 2018, around 11, and I'm on the line with Santa Cruz Tenants Association. I got that right, Cynthia?
Yes.
Activist Cynthia Berger, who has been been at this for, I don't know, what is it, 2 or 3 years now, doing the tenants' rights work?
4 years.
Okay. And recently, of course, a lot of work on Measure M, and I've seen you occasionally at City Council speaking on behalf. You got 4 minutes. Everybody else got two. Well, I got four, too. But
well, I requested ahead of time, so folks who are part of an organization can request from the mayor to have 4 minutes at the beginning of
right. Well, I found sometimes they do that for me and sometimes they don't. But Terrazas has been pretty good about that, strangely enough.
Well, here's what they do. They have public comments, and then they have comments about the item. And if you speak at comments about the item and they give you 4 minutes, then they don't allow you to speak at the public comment.
Right, but
the jury spoke.
Some of the mayors have been worse. They've said, well, if you want to represent an organization, no one else in that organization can talk during that time. That's what Coonerty tried to do, the younger Coonerty, when he was mayor.
Oh.
He was a bad boy. But you got to talk. You know, there have been a couple of meetings, and there'll be another one coming up next Tuesday, which could be a pretty important and heated meeting. You want to kind of review what's happened in the last two meetings and what's coming up?
Maybe you can explain this to me, but the new council members get sworn in at 7 o'clock, but I don't believe they get to vote at that meeting.
You know, it's a good question. I don't have a definitive answer, but I had thought, why do you think they
don't? I wish a large boot would appear on the end of a folding bracket and just kick out the ones who are no longer going to be there and allow the new ones.
That's harsher than a hook.
A large Doc Martens boot on the end of a...
But I don't know the answer to your question, though. I mean, I think if they wanted to, they could agendize something. They could have something on the agenda that they could talk about. And I'm getting the impression somehow, I'm not sure where I'm getting it from, that that is what they want to do. But I haven't talked to any of the council members who will be part of the new council about that. So I don't know, but it's a very good question.
Well, unfortunately, the new mayor is not a friend of renters, and that will be Martine Watkins. Mm-hmm. So they can try to agendize it, and we'll see what happens. So maybe there will be a free-for-all. I really doubt it. Genteel people who are elected to the council.
That brings up the question that I raised at the last council meeting publicly, actually, which is to say, can a mayor of her or his own accord simply put an item on the agenda if they want? And then what's the procedure if they're refusing to do it? And we got a false answer from, I guess it was from Sandy Brown. She said that, in essence, I don't know if she said it at that.
Well, no, I think that they told you that if three people vote for it, then it can be on the agenda.
Right. Well, the issue, though, is whether a mayor can do it as a matter of...
I believe they can. I believe that's one of the powers that they can put it on. And then if they don't want to put it on, if three members vote to put it on, then they have to put it on even though they want to.
I think you're right. Can you hold for just a moment?
Mm-hmm.
No, go away. We're back, Cynthia. Are you there?
Yeah.
Okay, yeah. The question arises, could three members, could three individuals who are about to be elected write up, you know, a request, you know, put an item on the agenda, Martine Watkins, who will be the new mayor, to put the item on the agenda. And then if she refuses, simply come together as a group before they are sworn in, or maybe have it ready to present as a requested emergency item. And they don't need, I think, to have it on the agenda as an emergency item before they don't need five votes before.
I think it gets until they've discussed it twice in public.
I mean, it gets put on the agenda, and then they need five votes to pass it. But I think to put it on the agenda, through an obstreperous mayor, probably only requires three. I've asked Bonnie Bush, the city administrator clerk, to send me the specific rules, which she said she would do verbally, and I also followed it up with an email recently. But nothing has come through yet. But I think it's a very good question. But what's the background?
If they put it on the agenda, Robert, they have to discuss it twice in public before they can vote on it.
Well, it depends. If they do it as an emergency item, they can vote on it then. And what
you
I'm saying,
don't have to discuss it more than once. Are you sure?
Yeah, an emergency item can be discussed once, and it can also then be voted on. That's why it's called an emergency. But of
the
course,
problem is it's not an emergency ordinance unless five people vote for it, Robert.
That's what I was saying. But to discuss.
So they could pass an ordinance that wouldn't take effect for a month. That's probably what's going to happen. Well, that month, everybody's going to get their rents raised and evicted.
Well, you see, that's I think the pressure on the mayor, the new mayor, who will now be in a minority position to some extent, because she has four votes against her in the new seven-person council on some issues, particularly on the rent issue, the rent and just eviction protection. So she may feel pressured to act on it, because you may remember that back in February, the council passed unanimously this temporary rent freeze and just eviction protection that lasted through the election.
No, they didn't pass the rent control unanimously. I mean, they passed it unanimously with those who were allowed to vote, and that was five. So that was bizarre,
right?
Frankly.
So that's a good point. They would have had six probably with Crone if he could have voted and without.
Well, no, if Crone had been there, Tarasas would have voted against it.
Right. Well, so they would have had six anyway, though, right?
They would have five. That's what they need,
But in any case, they would have had five. The point is, it was enough for an emergency vote at this meeting, too, if they wanted this upcoming meeting on December 11th.
No, not really.
Because they will have four people who are newly elected, and then the... what I'm saying is, no, they don't agree with it, but people who didn't agree with it voted for it anyway, right?
Wait a minute. Remind me who's left over besides Watkins and Matthews. Who's the third person that's anti-rent control? Donna Myers.
Chase. Right? Well, Chase is the third person. Chase is off. Oh, Chase is off.
Tarasas is off, and Naroyan is off.
Good point.
Donna Myers is the person to put pressure on. Now, she came out as anti-rent control. Campaign.
Okay. But
or at least anti-Measure M.
Right, but Naroyan, I believe, voted for the freeze originally back in February. That's my point. And therefore...
Yeah, but they're not going to vote for it again.
Well, the question, though, is, see, the reason they voted for it then was because of all the pressure you and other activists were putting on them with this initiative that made the ballot. Admittedly, you know, they had to...
No, the reason they voted for it then, and I really believe this, is because... If they didn't vote for it then, they knew that we were going forward with a rent control campaign, and they knew that it would be tenant slaughter. That's what I think, because that was what I educated them on, about how that has happened in other cities. And once they start having an open discussion about rent control, then the landlords start immediately jacking up rents and evicting people. So that was our... argument with them when we spoke to them ahead of time.
That's true, but
it wasn't like being a good person. You want to have this
I understand that, but it's the same argument again, see?
No, because they don't give a shit now, because now they have license, because Martine Watkins said it right in public at the last scheduled meeting. She said, oh, well, the voters have spoken. And so now she feels that she has license to be who she really is, which is... at the behest of the rich, you know, and powerful, apparently, or at least the property owners. She feels no... never met with tenants. She doesn't meet with students regularly.
Have you had any conversations with her subsequent in the last...
I don't lobby because I...
I understand, but have you had any informal conversations with her?
Yeah.
Okay. You could well be right, Cynthia, and I think your point... The information you're giving is important. I'm thinking, though, my thought was that if they had decided, you know, to go against this and not put in a rent freeze, what you say would have happened. But the main point would be that because of all these rent raises, it would have solidified the tenant movement and made it much more radical than it actually was. And that, I think, is the same situation now, because they have essentially, there are four votes for some kind of, you know, renter protection, just eviction protection, and rent.
The renter movement isn't, it's not a renter movement. It's not a renter movement. It's a movement that was started by a small group of people. Half of them weren't even renters. So let's be just, you know, really pretty clear about the real reality. There is now a raised profile of renters thanks to the rent control campaign. And more people are showing up at meetings because now there is a better mailing list of activists. But as far as who's running it and making it happen, people aren't, you know, necessarily even know what's going on at the city council. So I don't know. I'm just not clear on how radicalized the tenants are as a body. This is always the problem with tenants. As an identity,
you know, I'm not really talking about how radicalized they are, and I think you're right. I think it's the activists who've done this, a small group of activists, of which you were one, But I think the point is, I think the council was afraid of tenants getting activated. And I think whatever the election results, they are also aware that a lot of it had to do with the amount of money and advertising put in by out-of-county sources. And I don't know if they want to risk radicalization of... You're right. I don't think the tenants are radicalized yet, but I think they're sure as hell more likely to be if people start getting evicted. What's your take on that?
Well, yes. And so, well, they have to, you know, they have to admit that two pro-rent control candidates were elected out of three possible candidates. I mean, that's huge. And that means... You know, I don't know exactly what that means because at the same time Measure M was voted down. So some of the people who voted for pro-rent control candidates were brainwashed that Measure M is a bad... This is what they say about every... This is what the California Apartment Association, you know, talking point is about every rent control measure. Well, rent control is good, but this is a bad measure. They always say that.
Yeah, yeah.
Not like Measure M is really especially different.
Yeah. Well, you know, in answer to your question, though, Cynthia, I mean, in answer to the point you're raising.
Oh, I just totally lost my train of thought. But sorry, go ahead.
I just wanted to kind of butt in.
My point was.
Well, let me.
I don't know what their fear is of renters, but I know there's four people on there who respect renters.
Mm-hmm. Well, what I'm saying is, I think that the how do I put this?
We need to remind them. We need to remind Martine Watkins.
I remember what it was.
Why she passed the rent freeze. She voted for it in the first place because that hasn't gone away.
I remember that. Yeah, I think that's true. But I think I remember what I was trying to say, which is that the reason that M failed and these candidates won was twofold, at least. One of them was that the propaganda that was being pressed did not focus on the candidates. That's number one. And number two, as far as I know,
they didn't want to because then they'd be seen as racist.
Right. Well, whatever.
That was like a brilliant coup.
But in any case, that's one of the reasons that happened, that these two won.
That was an unplanned coup on our part.
And the other one was that they split their votes. You know, they had all these reactionary people running against each other. And, you know, Take Back Santa Cruz fighting with itself and all those.
Right.
You know, so all these.
Another reason. We did get a lot of students registered. Students haven't been participating. And we did really spend money on an organizer who was good, who was just graduated student who had been she had been an intern with Tenants Together last year. And she's very good. And, we did activate the student vote. And that, I think, is what put Drew over the top, because the final votes they were counting were same day registered.
Interesting.
And those are students.
Interesting. You know, I mean, I'm wondering though, the point I raised at the council meeting and that I've been occasionally, you know, shouting about or bringing
You've
up.
Been great.
Well, thank you. But you know what I think needs to be done now is. And I'm not, you know, at all involved in the tenants' rights movement and the way you are. But I think that the kind of, I understand this was being discussed at the last meeting on Monday. I wasn't there. I talked to someone who was. That what's needed is something like what, you know, Communist Party people did in the 30s in New York when they started evicting people and picked their furniture out of their house. People who were tenant supporters said, no way, we'll put it right back. And the kind of stuff that was being done, like frontal line action in Oakland that saved the Housing and Dignity Village. I don't know if you heard about that. That was in today's paper. The city said you can't be in this cleaning.
Yeah,
so,
but I just...
Let me finish it. I hear you. But I think, in other words, they stood. And these are larger urban areas where you have more people to, you know, much larger to rely on. Although, you know, that kind of thing has happened in Santa Cruz in the past in some circumstances.
So, yes, and I know the Students United with Renters are interested in figuring out how to do things like this. But, you know, Zoff, who I've worked closely with as a tenant counselor, you know, we understand we're up against a lot of tenant fear because, and this is where tenants and homeless people should be working together, right?
Right.
Because the tenants are afraid to stand up, all the time. They're afraid because they just don't have the power. But we hope that we've got a few more, you know, I think we got some more housing activists through this campaign process and people learning more about. And you know, how about these people living in a rent freeze and seeing how great it is to have rent control and getting 40% of the voters to vote for it the first time it's on the ballot in 30 years? To me, that was, you know, so that's building. You have to build the tenant base. It takes time.
I'm going down the Mississippi. Oh, I'm going down a southern road. And if you never see me again, remember that I had to go. Remember that I had to go. It's a long road down the Mississippi. It's a short road back the other way. If the cops pull you over to the side of the road, oh, you won't have nothing to say. No, you won't have nothing to say. There's a man waiting down in Mississippi, and he's waiting with a rifle in his hand. And he's looking down the road for an out-of-state car, and he thinks that he's fighting for his land. Yes, he thinks that he's fighting for his land. And he won't know the clothes that I'm wearing, and he doesn't know the name that I own. But his gun is large and his hate is hard, and he knows I'm coming down the road. Yes, he knows I'm coming down the road. Oh, it's not for the glory that I'm leaving. It's not trouble that I'm looking for. But there's lots of good work that's a-calling me down, and the waiting won't do no more. No, the waiting won't do no more. Don't call me the brave one for going. No, don't pin a medal to my name. Or even if there was any choice to make, I'd be going down just the same. I'd be going down just the same. For someone's gotta go to Mississippi, just as sure as there's a right and there's a wrong. And even though you say that the time will change, that time is just too long. That time is just too long. So I'm going down to Mississippi. Oh, I'm going down a southern road. And if you never see me again, remember that I had to go. Remember that I had to go.
Test.